Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. From Solomon's Temple to Herod's massive expansion, this episode traces the long and dramatic history of the Temple Mount through both scripture and archaeology. Dr. Joseph Holden and Dr. Pat Zukeran reveal how ancient structures, inscriptions, and artifacts align with the Bible's account of Israel's most important sacred space. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled The Temple Mount. And you'll also find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of this interesting topic.
The Jewish people were scattered throughout the world, and then finally we see the prophet Ezekiel in chapters 40 to 48 of his book. He describes a large millennial temple that will again be rebuilt. So the tribulation temple will be replaced with this millennial temple, which is extremely big, huge, large, and that will be the temple that will take us through that 1,000-year millennial period. So from the beginning of Genesis 22 to Ezekiel's prophecy of the millennial temple in Ezekiel 40 through 48, the temple had a great and illustrious history. Israel didn't always steward that temple correctly and morally, but God said he's going to bring one back that he will build ultimately for that millennial kingdom.
That's a great overview, Joe, and so much deep biblical and cultural history there. And, you know, you just sit back and you ponder, and I know I said this again, but it's just worth reflecting on that this small little piece of geography really is the focus, the epicenter of the world's attention. And we know why, because it ushered in, you know, the Messiah. So thanks for that.
And Brian.
Oh, yes.
If our listeners would like to go into the scriptures and read much about this, they can go to the books of the Chronicles. They can also pick up the book of Ezra. That talks about a return back into the land from captivity from Persia and Babylon. And he'll take many of the Jewish families to go back there. And their job was to get that temple, second temple, ultimately built. Now, later, our listeners can also read the book of Nehemiah, which after the temple was built, Nehemiah was sent there to build the walls and ultimately reconstruct the city. The temple had already been built. Now the infrastructure around the temple was going to be built as well. And that started to occur around 444 BC, about 70 years after the second temple was built under Zerubbabel. So those are some biblical books people can really get into and
yes.
find out more.
Yes, Ezra and Nehemiah, so good. And thanks for that, Joe. Those were kind of like little freebies. You gave us this wonderful overview, and then you tossed in some extras. I love it. Well, Pat, let's go to the fourth D, our denotation. What is the significance of the Temple Mount? You know, I've kind of alluded to it that, boy, the world has been watching this little piece of geography for thousands of years. What exactly is going on? Why is this so important?
Yes, Brian, you know, the temple was the most important structure in the history of the Jewish people. And still the site remains the most important site for the nation of Israel, because when David moved the capital to Jerusalem, Jerusalem became the political capital. But when he moved the Ark of the Covenant there, it became also the religious center for the people of Israel. Of course, you know the story in 2 Samuel 7, David wanted to build a temple for the Lord, but the Lord would not allow him to because he was a man of war. But he said, your son will build it. And Solomon built that temple there on the Temple Mount, and it was the most important structure for the nation of Israel. And that's where the presence of the Lord was. That's where, you know, the priest served. That's where the sacrifices were made. That became the center of the teaching and learning of the law. That's where the apostles first began preaching and gathering. we see in the early chapters, chapters 2 and 3 of the book of Acts. And so much of the preaching of the apostles occurred there, many think on the southern steps there in the book of Acts. When I was in Israel, one of the fascinating things that stunned me is that there were some people, many Muslims especially, who believed that the temple did not exist. You know, we're standing on the Temple Mount, and they're saying, where's the temple? I don't see anything. And it just kind of stunned me. You know, it's just kind of like, well, look around you. Many deny that there was a temple. There are some critics, not that many, who deny the existence of the temple. But the evidence is just too overwhelming that indeed we have the remains there of the foundation and the retaining walls and the platform of the temple. And if the temple did not exist, of course, that would be a huge blow to the historical reliability of the Bible, because it is a main feature throughout the Old and New Testament in the book of Acts, you know. But the discovery of the Temple Mount affirms the historical reliability of the Bible. And as Joe mentioned, the prophets and the apostles predict that there will be a third temple there in the future. Ezekiel, you know, gives the most detailed description of the third temple, the future temple that will be there. And when you go to Israel today, to the famous Western Wall, where you might see on TV or the Discovery Channel, many of the Jews there praying as they place their hands upon the Western Wall and pray. If you look to the left, if you're looking at the Western Wall, look to the left, there's a temple museum there where they have designs for the rebuilding of a third temple. So it has tremendous significance to the nation of Israel, but also to the, you know, historical reliability of the Bible.
Stellar. Thanks for that, Pat. Joe, Pat mentioned evidence, some of the evidence that has been brought forward to support the archaeological and biblical record. Let's talk about some of that. What is some of the evidence, some of the support that archaeologists have found to really demonstrate that the Temple Mount is the Temple Mount the Bible describes?
Well, the great thing about the Bible is that we have such a rich cache of material remains, artifacts that we've discovered, cities that have been excavated over the years, that we no longer have to, you know, panic or sweat because of the skeptics' attack on the Christian faith. We can point to actual tangible evidence that points to the fact that the Bible is telling us the truth. It's giving us accurate geography, accurate people, accurate coinage, and in the time and space that it describes. The biblical authors never had a fictitious understanding of the world around them. They didn't know how to write in fiction. They simply wrote it as straightforward geography, straightforward buildings and people, structure, coinage, and government, and so forth. And that's what I appreciate about the Christian faith. It's historic, rooted in reality. When we come to the Temple Mount, you find a plethora of remains that we could point to that supports the existence and the former workings of the temple there right in Jerusalem on Temple Mount. First of all, you have the retaining walls that are completely exposed all the way around this over 35-acre platform that you can go to today, especially the southwest corner. Benjamin Mazar and others, even Lean Rittmeyer, helped in the excavation of that southwest corner, where these huge retaining walls with these massive stones have been set in place and been sitting there for centuries. You can look at them and be assured that that is the Temple Mount structure. You have a pile of building stones even down below the retaining walls that are sitting on a first century street that the Romans pushed over the edge of the balustrade and into the street below. Remember, Jesus in Matthew 24 said, there would not be one stone upon another left in this place, as Jesus was talking to his disciples. And that's indeed what happened. The Romans dumped everything, all the buildings, over the side of these huge, tall retaining walls. Nothing of a building sort stood ultimately on the top of the Temple Mount when the Romans were finished with it. You have the trumpeting stone we can point to. It says this is the place of trumpeting where they would announce the beginning and ending of the Sabbath. And it was right there. The Romans tipped that over the corner of the southwest corner of the Temple Mount platform. We've discovered the triple gates down on the southern side of the Temple Mount platform where people could come through the south side of the temple, enter these triple arched gates, and then go up steps up to the Temple Mount surface and the top, the platform itself, to access the temple and the court of the Gentiles. The southern steps have been all excavated. You can go there today and walk on them, where the southern steps are between the south end of the temple platform and the city of David, where David had his palace, where he ruled and reigned, just an eye shot right there off the southern steps. As Pat mentioned earlier, there's even warning markers written in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek that warn Gentiles not to proceed past a certain point in the temple platform under the peril of death. They said, basically, you're responsible for your own death if you pass this line. They called that line the Soreg line. Gentiles had to stay behind that Soreg line and not pass. Only the Jewish people could pass that point and get closer in, such as the court of the women and so forth. And then you have the Arch of Titus in Rome. Rome sacked Jerusalem and the temple, and it depicts on this arch in Rome near the Colosseum of the Roman army taking the spoils from the temple. It shows the menorah being carried back to Rome. It shows the trumpets and other valuables from the temple being taken back. But what we don't see is the Ark of the Covenant on there. They must have either hid it or it was gone before the Romans ultimately got there. The three shekels ostracon that talks about the three shekels of silver that were donated to the temple of Yahweh dates to the 7th century BC. We have the House of God ostracon that was discovered in Arad there in the Negev desert. It dates to the 6th century BC, another receipt. We have found bulla, which are little stamp seals as big as a nickel, that have imprints of names and titles. The Immer bulla that was discovered by Gabriel Barkai and Zaki Zweig there in Jerusalem, they were sifting that rich material that was discovered on top of the Temple Mount platform. It was moved to another location. They began to sift it, and lo and behold, they find the stamp seal of the Immer family. And if you know who the Immer family was, it was mentioned in Jeremiah 20, verse 1. The sons of Immer were the Temple Mount administrators. They were a priestly family that continued to administrate the Temple Mount. They mistreated Jeremiah during his time and during his prophecy. But those seals are so great because they give us a personal touch to who was involved on the Temple Mount. And then finally, I know I'm going long here, but Lean Rittmeyer, he has discovered that the rock under the dome of the rock there, that gold dome, the rock, the surface of Mount Moriah there, the summit, has the markings of foundation trenches that are of the exact measurement that we find in 1 Kings 6:20. It says that the Holy of Holies was 20 cubits by 20 cubits, ultimately, and that's what the foundation trenches that Rittmeyer discovered on the surface of the rock underneath the dome that they have there. And it's interesting also, he not only found the foundation trenches for what he believes to be the walls of the Holy of Holies, he also found the place that was prepared by Solomon to set the ark in the exact center of that 20 by 20 cubit area. In fact, he talks about the language that's ultimately being used in this place where Solomon prepared the ark. And it measured about 2.25 feet by 3.75 feet long, this prepared area in the center of this Holy of Holies. And he went back and looked at 1 Kings 6:19 through 21, and he saw that it was consistent with what Solomon wrote, that it was a place that was made or prepared to set the ark upon. And that 2.25 feet by 3.75 feet, that was the exact dimensions of the Ark of the Covenant. So he has found all kinds of interesting detail and markings on the surface of that rock that lends us to believe that the temple stood exactly where the dome of the rock stands today. Now, there are many different theories out there, but ultimately, you can learn more by looking at Leon Ripmeyer's material and how he justifies what he has found. It's very fascinating.
Mm. Joe, that was quite a list and really amazing detail. If our listeners didn't pick up on it, the evidence is very prominent. There's plenty of proof that the Temple Mount not only is a historical archaeological place, but it's very precise to its biblical rendering. So that was just amazing. Well, Pat, you know, we've been looking to the past, kind of describing the biblical and cultural record and the evidence found. Let's move to the present now. To your knowledge, what is the continual archaeological research on the Temple Mount? We mentioned Shiloh, but what else is going on there? What's happening today?
Yes, you know, Brian, I mean, we are making remarkable discoveries in Jerusalem and also at the Temple Mount, as Joe mentioned. Just recently, and there's been articles on this, probably the best place to go is the Biblical Archaeological Review, their website or their magazine. Just recently, the Al-Aqsa Mosque there, the Islamic mosque on the south side, it suffered a lot of damage due to earthquake activity. Well, they began a reconstruction and refurbishing of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they discovered that there are wooden beams that are 3,000 years old. In other words, they date back to the time of Solomon's temple. They're part of the construction there, but they're also laying outside in the back courtyard. And researchers have studied it, and some are 3,000 years old. And some had Arabic inscriptions on some of the beams stating that they came from the Temple Mount. So those were probably beams from the original temple there. So it's quite an exciting discovery there just recently. So if people want to look that up, that's probably in the Biblical Archaeological Review magazine. But of course, we have the Temple Mount Sifting Project since 2004. They have been excavating over there. And they, you know, as Joe stated, man, they found just a plethora of material dating back to the first and second temple. They have coins with inscriptions on them, so we know the dates. We found pottery. We've recently, through the techniques that we have developed, it's called wet sifting, we have discovered mosaic tiles, arrowheads, and seals. And so there's continual activity there on the mount with the Temple Mount Sifting Project. And I think just recently, 2025, you know, for example, they found a bulla or a clay seal impression dated to the 7th or 6th century BC. And it could clearly be read, the Hebrew, and one of the impressions read belonging to Yediah, son of Asayahu, or Isaiah for short. This refers most likely to 2 Kings 22:12. This was a man, he was the servant of King Josiah. So whether it's his seal or not, we're not sure, but it confirms that this was a name used during this period of history. And so this kind of tiny detail shows the accuracy of the Bible. I mean, if they're accurate on tiny details like this, you can be reliably sure that when it comes to the main features of what the Bible is talking about, they are dead on accurate. If they're accurate in this kind of detail, you know, as I stated previously, if you've got a witness on the stand in court and he's getting little details right about the event he is talking about, man, you know that is a highly reliable witness. And that's what we're seeing with the Bible here, not only, you know, the discoveries on the Temple Mount, but all over the place.
It really is exciting discoveries. I mean, this isn't just stuff that was found in the 60s and 70s and 80s, but things that are currently being discovered, as you pointed out, Pat, just even last year, new findings. And it really does show the Bible as a reliable series of books. So, Joe and Pat, as we normally like to do, we conclude our programming with books if our listeners want to dig deeper in the topic. And of course, we've already mentioned Lean Ritmeyer, who's one of the great experts on the Temple Mount. He is a Dutch archaeologist and architect who is renowned for his work on the Temple Mount. But Joe, what other books or resources would you point our listeners to?
Well, I'd like to first highlight Lean Ritmeyer's number one work, where he dedicates all his research and focuses it in on the Temple Mount platform and the Temple Mount itself. It's titled The Quest. And once you start reading that, it's highly illustrated with great descriptions of every feature of the Temple Mount area. He also identifies the various steps that are on the northwestern corner. That was the line on which Solomon built his first temple, and also describes all the different features of the rock under the Dome of the Rock that lends him to believe that that's where the temple was built, and that's where the first and second temple stood, and all the details and the features. He helps you to understand that. So that is simply amazing. And also, if you want to know more about the various stamp seals and bulla and so forth and the archaeological findings that relate to the Temple Mount, you can pick up our book, and I say our, myself and Dr. Norman Geisler co-authored a book called The Popular Handbook of Archaeology in the Bible, where we list dozens of these inscriptions that were found, and many of them refer to people known in the first and second temple period. Ultimately. So what an amazing place to start. Very readable. It's written in a way that our readers can really, really dive in and enjoy.
Mm. All right, Pat, how about you? Any books you would recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, I think a great place to start is the book that Joe Holden mentioned, The Handbook of Archaeology and the Bible by Holden and Geisler. And also another great place to start is The Harvest Handbook of Bible Lands, written by premier archaeologist Steve Collins and that guy Holden. Again, man, he's everywhere. The omnipresent Joe Holden. And then Lean Ritmeyer's book, The Quest, might, you know, as Joe mentioned, is one of the best on the Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. And then another book that I would recommend is The Architecture of Herod, the Great Builder. A lot of us only know King Herod as the guy that tried to kill Jesus. Well, he was one of the greatest engineers and architects of the first century. And not only describes, you know, the fortresses that he built, like Masada, that people are familiar with, he rebuilt that temple platform and did an amazing, incredible job of engineering, of raising that south side of the temple. And this, so The Architecture of Herod, the Great Builder by Ehud Netzer. And so it gives a great description on the Jerusalem temple, the rebuilding of Herod.
Mm, so good. Such great resources. And as our listeners could probably pick up, we're really excited about these topics and resources, because as you dig into archaeology, you really ultimately dig into biblical reliability. So we encourage you to check those out. Join us next episode as we continue our new series on archaeology in the Bible, the top 10 discoveries. Next week, we're going to turn our attention to the New Testament, looking at Herod and Pilate. Until then, may the Lord richly bless you.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586, or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts. Like Pat's on the Air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.